You can meet and hear Mark and Molly Hemingway, Robert George, Albert Moeller, Brian Wolfmiller, Hans Feeney, and Will Wheaton at the 2020 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 12th and Saturday, June 13th in Chicago. For more information, visit issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. The 2020 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 12th and 13th at Concordia University, Chicago.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. We were recently talking about a new study on abortion regret, and a question kept occurring to me about how solid the research actually is. Is it true that women have abortions and very few of them experience regret? The author of the new study called The Notion of Abortion Regret a myth with absolutely no evidence. Is that true? Welcome back to Issues Etc. Dr. Michael New joins us to talk about two issues, a new study on abortion regret and a new poll on the role of religion in public policy and what it had to say about support for abortion in the United States. Dr. New is visiting assistant professor at the Catholic University of America, associate scholar at the Charlotte Lozier Institute, and columnist for National Review Online. Dr. New, welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
What did the media coverage of this recent survey on abortion regret fail to tell us?
Well, it was very frustrating. I mean, typically when any study comes out about abortion, especially if it's conducted by a group that supports legal abortion, the media just tends to report the findings very uncritically. And in this case, they just ran the headline that few women regret abortion. And they didn't really look very closely at the study itself or find problems with its methodology. And that was a problem. That, for instance, this study was done by a group of researchers based out of University of California, San Francisco. This group has a very strong bias in favor of legal abortion. They get money from groups that support abortion. That wasn't mentioned. Another thing, problem with the study, is that it had a very low kind of rate of response. They were approaching abortion-minded women back in between 2008 and 2010, and only about 38% of the women they approached agreed to take part. And I think that pretty clearly skews the results. I think that women who agreed to participate in the survey are probably more confident in their decision, may have less moral qualms about abortion, and may be less likely to suffer psychologically afterwards. So, again, the funders of the study, the people who did the study, the low response rate, these are all problems the media basically ignored.
Tell us about that group you've mentioned here, Advancing New Standards in Reproductive Health. What do we know about them?
Yeah, they're a group that's based out of University of San Francisco. They have launched a project called something called the Turnaway Study, where they basically between 2008 and 2010 found a group of women that were seeking abortions. Some of the women obtained abortions, while others could not because the abortion clinic they went to wouldn't do abortions above a certain gestational age limit. And they compare those two groups. And this could, you know, be an interesting research project. But in their hands, they always spin the results to make it look like that the group that obtained abortions is not suffering any negative effects, either saying not necessarily none, but is less likely, I should say, or just have a high incidence of psychological problems than the group that went ahead and carried their pregnancy to term. And again, I think that they just mislead people. I think that, again, one big problem with the study that I'll get into is that they can't track all these women very effectively. You know, they want to check back every year, every 6 months or so, for a span of 5 years. Well, 5 years later, they're only reaching out to less than 60% of the women they originally contacted. 40% of the survey kind of vanishes. And I think that people who aren't responding, these are women that are either suffering psychologically or suffering financially, that women who aren't participating anymore are probably having some adverse life outcomes, and the study's not capturing that.
Why is it important for us to note, as you did a moment ago, that only 38% of the women asked to participate in the survey agreed to do so, and then, as you said, there was an attrition as they continued to follow up?
Right. First off, again, I mean, I think that you obviously they couldn't require people to participate. They had to rely on volunteers. And essentially, people who volunteer for a study are often going to be a lot different than those who don't. And again, abortion is obviously a very sensitive issue. It's stigmatized in certain parts of the country. And I think that those women who agreed to talk to a researcher and, frankly, answer some pretty personal questions were different than other women. You know, those women who agreed to take part in a study or a survey about a sensitive issue like abortion might be more confident in their decision to get an abortion. They might have fewer moral qualms about abortion. And I think women who are a bit more confident have fewer moral qualms. I think this group of women might be a bit less likely to suffer psychologically than women who are more unsure or have religious beliefs that think abortion's wrong.
You mentioned that the follow-up with the survey was inadequate. How did that further skew the results?
Well, again, that they, again, found a group of women who obtained abortions, and the plan was to contact these women every 6 months or so and just see how they're doing, looking at how they're doing economically, looking at how they're doing psychologically. But the problem is they couldn't keep up with all the women. Some women dropped out of the survey. I guess either they couldn't be reached or they refused to participate. And again, I think that those women who dropped out of the survey were probably a lot more likely to be suffering psychologically, that there's a good chance that the reason why they didn't participate is because they were having some problems in their life, either economically or psychologically or in terms of their physical health. And again, this skews the survey. So those women you can find are likely to be doing well, relatively speaking. Those women who, frankly, you cannot find, who drop out, can't be reached, are probably having a tougher time, and that, again, is skewing the results.
What does other more reliable research tell us about post-abortion regret?
You know, there are some, you know, good studies out there. I know my friend Priscilla Coleman did a meta-study where that looks at the results of many, many studies, and that was published in a top journal, the British Journal of Psychiatry. And she found that when you look at large data sets and you track the women for long periods of time, there is evidence that abortion leads to psychological problems. You know, that she did find evidence that, you know, women who obtained abortions were likely to suffer from anxiety or depression. There's also studies that show that women who obtain abortions are more likely to abuse drugs or alcohol. So, again, there is a good body of research that shows that abortion can increase the risk for various mental health problems. It's interesting. My friend Paul Sullins, who recently retired from Catholic University of America but still does research, did a study of was able to look at women who obtained abortions of pregnancies they wanted. So sometimes women who seek to get pregnant obtain abortions because a partner or parents or others in her life don't want her to carry that pregnancy to term. And she found that, or my friend, you know, Professor Sullins found that when women abort wanted pregnancies, that really increases mental health risks pretty dramatically. That, again, he did a study on this using data from the Adolescent Health Survey that tracks women for over like 13 years. Again, this is very rigorous, well done. And again, there is just a good body of research that shows that women who obtain abortions are more likely to suffer from a range of mental health problems.
There was a recent National Opinion Research Center poll that was rather broad, but it did ask questions about abortion views among those who were responding. And you say that the wording of a particular question probably skewed the responses. How so?
Right. This poll was by and large about the impact of religion on kind of politics and public policy. And it did include a question about abortion. And the question that they asked, you know, seemed okay on the surface, but I think kind of, again, skewed the results toward a more quote-unquote pro-choice position. It asked people, do you think abortion should be limited except in cases of, you know, rape, incest, and serious health risk? And that doesn't sound like a bad question, but the problem with that question is that there's a lot of people out there, maybe not a high percentage, but a significant percentage, who think that all unborn children should be protected and don't think abortion should be an acceptable option or a legal option in the case of rape or incest. So you lose that fraction of people when you word the question that way. So this only found that 38% of people think that abortion should be limited except in cases of rape or incest or perhaps a health risk to the mother. Other polls that kind of offer a wider range of options, you know, should abortion never be a legal option, should be legal in limited circumstances, you know, these polls tend to find that 45% or mid-40s think it should be either illegal or legal only in limited circumstances. So the fact that they didn't give people a range of options, I think skewed the results, and I think led to kind of less support for the pro-life position than there currently is.
What do we know about opposition to abortion from other polling?
We know, interestingly, that there's a great deal of consensus, and a lot more consensus than people realize. That, unfortunately, pollsters don't often ask about incremental pro-life laws. as much as I wish they would. But whatever they do, they show that most Americans support a lot of incremental pro-life laws. Limits on third trimester abortions enjoy strong support. Limits on second trimester abortions enjoy strong support. There's very strong support for things like waiting periods and parental involvement laws, and limits on taxpayer funding of abortion. So the kind of incremental things that pro-lifers are working on really do enjoy very widespread public support. But unfortunately, you know, there's not as much polling on these issues as there are on some other issues involving this issue.
Finally, with about 30 seconds, how should questions be worded in these surveys about abortion to get the most accurate responses?
Well, it's just people come about a range of policy issues, including limits on second trimester abortions, third trimester abortions. And when they ask about legality of abortion, they should give people a range of options. People have fairly nuanced views. Pro-life, pro-choice doesn't really explain the attitudes a lot of people have. And again, when you give people kind of a wide range of choices, you know, you do see situations where people do think unborn children should be protected in a pretty wide range of circumstances.
Dr. Michael New is visiting assistant professor at the Catholic University of America, associate scholar at the Charlotte Lozier Institute, and columnist for National Review Online. You can read his columns at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk On Demand Archives. Dr. New, thank you for your time.
No, thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.
Here are the speakers and the topics for the 2020 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 12th and Saturday, June 13th in Chicago. Making the Case for Truth in an Age of Anti-Truth. Dr. Albert Moeller will be speaking on that subject. Pastor Brian Wolf Miller will take up the Case for the Trinity. Pastor Hans Feeney will be making the case for the obedience of Christ. Dr. Robert George will be making the case for two things, making the case against judicial activism and making the legal case against pornography. And finally, Mark and Molly Hemingway will spend some time with participants making the case for Christian political engagement. You can learn more about the premier conference for Christian laity at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. It's the 2020 Making the Case Conference, June 12th and 13th. At Concordia University, Chicago. Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll continue our Lutheran Catechesis series talking with Pastor Peter Bender about the sacrament of holy baptism and Jesus blessing little children. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills, too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the gift of Latin today. To order, visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR20. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.